Welcome today to our interview series with outstanding professionals. I'm Stephen Ibaraki, and I'm conducting an exclusive interview with Fabio Banducci, President and CEO, Pier 1 Hosting. Fabio, you have an amazing background and a substantive history of leadership that you're bringing to this interview, and we're very fortunate you came in to do this interview and you were able to share your deep experiences with the audience. Thank you.
Thank you, Stephen. I'm happy to be here.
Fabio, can you profile your history prior to joining Pier 1 Hosting? And then based on your experiences in your prior roles, what lessons would be useful to the audience?
Sure, I'd be happy to, Stephen. I guess from an education perspective, I graduated from the University of British Columbia with a Bachelor of Applied Science degree and worked in engineering for a while. And then I returned to McGill University where I completed my MBA. Following that, I joined a large Canadian investment bank in Europe, where I spent 2 years working for the CIBC and their investment bank called Wood Gundy at the time. Following that, I returned to Canada, and I joined a much smaller Canadian regional retail brokerage firm and was part of a team that transformed that company into one of Canada's leading institutional investment dealers. I spent 12 years with that firm, and in terms of lessons that came from that experience, you know, I would sort of highlight a few for the audience. One is make sure at all times that you have the right person doing the right job. From my perspective, it's all about the team. I would say also stay very focused against your plan, your business plan, and your objectives. And I'd also say welcome and embrace change. And that's a lesson I certainly learned in my experience with the Canadian investment dealer. We embraced significant change and enjoyed significant growth and lots of challenges, but it required everyone to embrace change. I think one of the other lessons I learned was to hone your skill of seek first to understand before being understood.
Well, you have a really fascinating educational background. That is a background in science with your applied science degree, and then you also have education and business as well. So with all of that background, what specific items do you find are most useful to you now as a leading executive?
Well, Stephen, it's changed over the course of time, I would say. Earlier in my career, I was definitely drawing upon more of, I guess, sort of the left brain-centric skills, and I would find myself drawing upon more so the analytical rigors that come from engineering training, logic flows, just logic in general in terms of problem solving. And as I've gained more management and leadership exposure and roles, it certainly has shifted to more skills I learned through my MBA training, which tend to be more on the people side and the softer skills. And so from my perspective, certainly organizational behavior, team dynamics, human behavior, and things like time management are skills that that I rely upon and draw upon extensively now as my role as CEO of Pier 1 Hosting.
You know, I saw a study from Princeton where it sort of stated that, you know, you take a 2 to 3 year MBA and that really could probably condense that down to something like 2 months using the best practices from all the kind of disciplines that you learn in an MBA program. Would you find that is also true?
I would find if I were defining an MBA program now with the benefit of 20 years of professional experience, I would load it up with the softer skills. I think the more rigorous analytical skills you can learn. I think business at its heart is all about relationships. And that then sort of defines team dynamics, interactions, agendas people have, and ways to be effective within organizations. And so I would definitely load an MBA program up less with sort of the analytical rigors than with sort of the softer, more people skills, emotional intelligence types of courses.
Now, you have this very senior role with Pier 1 Hosting. Can you profile what your job entails and what your goals are?
Sure, I'd be happy to. And it as well, Stephen, has changed over the years. I've now been with Pier 1 Hosting coming up to 5 years, and I was recruited by the board of Pier 1 Hosting to lead a turnaround, and I joined the company in 2005 as its executive vice president, and I was reporting to the then CEO, Lance Tracy, who's our co-founder and largest shareholder of Pier 1 Hosting. And Pier 1 at the time had made a couple of acquisitions and was confronted with a number of challenges. And so I was recruited to come in to lead a new team to get our arms around these acquisitions that had been made, to stabilize the operations and to position the company for further growth and margin improvement. And so I started in the role of executive vice president, leading the turnaround efforts. And then a year subsequent, I was appointed president of the company. And a year following, in September of 2007, I became president and CEO of the company, as well as all of its subsidiaries. And so today, my roles really center around managing sort of relationships with our board of directors. And we are a publicly listed company on the Toronto Stock Exchange. And so that occupies probably 15 to 20% of my time. I seek to sort of continue to mentor and build and grow our team. And we've made significant progress in building that team over the years. I also get involved in what we refer to as executive sponsorship. So these are sort of higher level engagement with customers, higher profile customers, customers with more complex requirements. And the same holds true for sort of strategic partnerships, whether that's on the product side or whether that's in terms of like our sales channel side or the international expansion that we've worked through over the last couple of years. And so I also look at acquisitions on behalf of the company, but our strategy is really anchored around organic growth. But in light of the fact that our industry is highly fragmented, we do expect over the course of time that we may make additional acquisitions in our industry as well.
So what kind of attributes would make for a successful leader candidate for Pier 1?
Well, we are, Stephen, a value-based organization, and so we have a very enterprising spirit about us. And in addition, you know, we are in the service industry, and we've elected to position Pier 1 very much as a leading service company. And so from a leadership perspective, we are looking for those who are a tight alignment with our values and within our culture, who have leadership experience and who take pride and are fulfilled by building teams and who put the customer first and make the customer the star. And so at Pier 1 Hosting, we're very much about delivering an exceptional customer experience. And we're very transparent about the progress that we're making in terms of industry standard measures, in terms of how our customers perceive the service and the experience that they receive while they partner with Pier 1 to manage their infrastructure requirements. And so those would be some of the elements that we would look for in addition to sort of the technical competence levels for a leadership role here at Pier 1.
So what are the major challenges facing the industry today, and how can they be solved?
Well, I think there are a few that come to mind. One, particularly over the last, I would say, 7 to 8 years, has been very much an increase in the power densities of the servers that are deployed within our data centers as well as in other data centers. And so there is an issue that we're working through as an industry where infrastructure, and by that I'm referring to the data center infrastructure and the infrastructure that supports the data center where servers are deployed, much of that infrastructure is now becoming more dated. And so we're sort of going through a refresh cycle, and there's lots of discussion around the industry in terms of how best to deal with the increased power densities and how to make the new infrastructure as energy efficient as possible. And there have been some great strides made in that area. And we just launched our most recent and our largest data center in the Greater Toronto Area. And the efficiencies that, you know, we gained through the design and engineering of that particular data center relative to data centers that were commissioned, designed, and built 10 years ago is dramatic. And so I think as an industry, everyone is looking at ways to make their centers more more green, more efficient. And I think what also plays into that is, you know, the opportunity to increase the overall amount of efficiency of the computing power that's deployed within those data centers. And so I actually see that as an opportunity and a firm believer that virtualized environments will continue to become more prevalent. You'll see continued movement toward cloud-based services and offerings. And I contend that that will ultimately result in sort of more of efficient use of every square foot within a data center infrastructure. So at Pier 1, we're fully embracing those, both in terms of the energy efficiency side of things and a movement towards deploying more processing efficient deployments on behalf of our customers.
So then what are the major opportunities facing the industry and how can they be leveraged?
Well, I think there are a number of opportunities that the industry is faced with. I think I would start with sort of the key drivers behind the industry, and as I see them, there really has been an increased dependency on the internet by businesses really of all sizes and descriptions. And that dependency on the internet is creating an environment where the complexity of being able to maintain and scale IT hosting or internet infrastructure continues to increase dramatically. And for small and medium-sized businesses in particular, it's completely overwhelming their abilities to be able to staff or have the infrastructure in place to be able to compete as a result of this dependency on the internet. So I see the dependency on the internet just continuing to accelerate. I think you will see all sorts of movement, whether it's all the software vendors moving their applications to a web-based form of application, continued e-commerce opportunities, SaaS-enabled types of opportunities, I think is a tremendous opportunity for the industry there. And I think here as well, I think virtualization will play a role, just as it creates enhanced sort of efficiencies in the types of deployments that hosting providers such as Pier 1 are able to offer to their customers.
And what are the best practices in the hosting industry?
Well, they would come in a few different elements. I think first and foremost, an ability to support and scale your customers' deployments. And so, most of our customers, the large majority of our customers, for example, are entrusting with us their mission-critical deployment. And so if there is ever any challenge or issue with the deployment, we need to be, and the industry needs to be, and best practice in the industry is to be able to be as responsive, and not just responsive, proactively as well, to attend to whatever issue of an infrastructure nature may surface. And increasingly, our customers are dependent on those deployments. Many of them have their mission-critical deployments. And so in terms of best practices, without question, first and foremost, is an organization that can be responsive and that has the technical expertise and domain knowledge to be able to proactively identify and resolve issues that surface with respect to the infrastructure. I would also say that data center infrastructure, to I guess some of my comments earlier, is also becoming increasingly important, particularly in light of the fact of the increase in power density of the servers that are being deployed. And so there are a number of instances across a number of data centers where space is constrained not by square footage, but by the availability of power. And so as a result, from a customer's perspective and the opportunity to be able to scale and to grow, I think customers are well advised to, consider the opportunity for further growth within the data center that they might select, with the provider they may select, who has got sort of infrastructure that will enable their deployments to scale. Because switching costs are high, and, we have, our mission is, I would say, is really quite straightforward, yet powerful. And, we see our role in life, and the reason we exist is to be able to enable our customers to focus on the possibilities of the internet and not the problems. And so we see ourselves as a trusted partner, and we're here to scale that infrastructure on behalf of our customers for so long as they have requirements for the internet infrastructure itself. I think also network performance is another area I would highlight in terms of best practices. Network sort of performance comes in a variety of different instances, but increasingly a number of our customers require very efficient, low latency, high performance network connectivity. And we've elected strategically to retain full control over our network operations. And so we have full control over a network that connects all of our 17 data centers together across North America and Europe. And we tracked a lot of customers who are looking for that level of control and that degree of flexibility and performance across the network infrastructure itself.
Okay, I want to drill more now into Pier 1 hosting and ask some more specific questions about Pier 1. So what are some Pier 1 success stories and how do they translate into meaningful value?
Okay, well, Pier 1 hosting was founded here in Vancouver in 1999, from very, very humble beginnings, has now emerged 10, 11 years later as one of the leading hosting providers in the world targeting small and medium-sized businesses. And so as I think of sort of the value and how that's been translated into meaningful value, I guess I would have a couple of comments to that. One is we've grown to 10,000 customers, or we now count our customers in greater amount than 10,000. Our first customer remains our customer today, as does our first employee. And through that, we've seen the value of our services, particularly across the SMB universe, continue to increase. So as the complexity of maintaining and scaling these deployments continues to increase, so too does our value that we are able to offer to our customers. And so we position ourselves as a strategic partner. And I would say that, you know, these outsourced services, which hosting represents, has also changed significantly over the years. I think early on, if I think back sort of 7-8 years ago, you know, outsourcing of infrastructure would have been seen more as sort of a cost-saving exercise, or that would be, in large part, a lot of the analysis that would take place. I would say that today, outsourcing is viewed as far more strategic. We do certainly offer the opportunity to sort of transform what for many of our customers would otherwise be a fixed cost into a variable cost, and that's very helpful from a cash flow perspective to many of our customers. But in addition, the technical expertise and domain knowledge, the security, the redundancy in the infrastructure, the network connectivity, all of these features are features which typically small and medium-sized businesses just can't expect to be able to deploy or develop on their own. Larger enterprises strategically can elect to build out their infrastructure and large IT departments to be able to support all of their infrastructure, but that typically is not available to small and medium-sized businesses, and is one of the reasons why we positioned Pier 1 as a hosting provider to the small and medium-sized business segment.
You know, early on in the sort of the history of Pier 1, then, did you have to sort of seek help from venture capital or angel investors, that kind of thing?
Yes, in part. The company, I mentioned Lance Tracy earlier, he's one of our co-founders and Pier 1's largest shareholder. And Lance was the original provider of seed capital and his partner, Scott Shaw. And they've been investing in technology companies for many, many years. And so they were the original founders and providers of capital to Pier 1. Pier 1's never had any sort of organized venture capital per se, other than the company did list publicly, and so it has well over 1,200 shareholders. And in recent times, more recently, within the last couple of years, in fact, it's just in the last year, we welcomed a large Canadian private equity sponsor named Clairvest Equity Partners out of Toronto, and they own about 17% interest in Pier 1, and they are our private equity sponsor. But the capital that's been used to grow the business, and one feature that we're very proud of here at Pier 1, was, again, we started from very humble beginnings, and a lot of the growth that we've enjoyed has been as a result of, you know, operating and financial discipline that's been brought to Pier 1. That's enabled Pier 1 to grow and fund its own operations from the cash flow that it generates from its own operations. So we've managed to grow organically by being able to fund largely our own growth, and we now have and enjoy significant equity sponsorship through Clairvest Equity Partners. And in addition, we have a very strong relationship with the National Bank Financial Group out of Montreal, and they are our lenders.
I see. So, you know, you started on this journey about growth. Can you sort of profile further the growth of your company?
Sure. So, again, we started in 1999. And started with co-location services here in Vancouver, and then the company grew, and a few years later opened its presence in 2002 in Toronto, and then followed with a small location in Montreal. And then the company made two acquisitions, both of which were in the United States. And so those acquisitions brought additional infrastructure to Pier 1 in the names of New York, Virginia, Miami, Atlanta, and San Antonio. And then we commissioned data center infrastructure in addition in Los Angeles, in San Jose, and in Seattle. And then a couple of years ago, about a year and a half ago actually now, we expanded our operations into Europe by establishing a presence in the United Kingdom by opening up a subsidiary we refer to as Pier 1 UK. And so we elected strategically to expand our core services over to Europe, and we've done so through Pier 1 UK, which is now about 18 months old. And so as I think about the growth over the years, we're publicly listed, as I mentioned, so all of our financial information is available to your readers or listeners through SEDAR.com. We are now about $100 million a year business. We're profitable, and as I mentioned, we fund our growth largely through cash flow that we generate from our own operations. We now have about 400 employees, and here at Pier 1 Hosting, we refer to our employees as peers. So we have about 400 passionate peers that service our customers. And our customers now, we deploy and provision our services through 17 data centers that we operate primarily across North America, in addition to one data center we opened up last year in the United Kingdom. And as I mentioned before, all of that data center infrastructure is connected together by what we refer to as the Pier 1 Super Network. And this is a network, a high-performance IP-based network that we retain full control over. And so we control over 13,000 miles of fiber connectivity now. And again, that network connects all of our data center infrastructure together and enables us to be able to bring very unique and specialized products and an enhanced service to our 10,000 customers and growing.
So you talked about the fact that you're targeted towards small and medium-sized enterprises. Can you sort of pinpoint the value that you offer to SMEs?
Sure. Ultimately, the value that we provide to our customers, which tend to be mainly small and medium-sized businesses, is that we deliver peace of mind. And as I think back again to the reason why we exist and the reason for the success that we've enjoyed to date is because we've held true to our mission. And as I mentioned, our mission is really to enable our customers to focus on the possibilities of the Internet and not the problems. And so what that means in practical terms to our customers and the value that they derive is that they have a trusted partner that they can rely upon to manage and maintain and to scale their Internet infrastructure while they focus on their core competency. And that's whether it's through some form of application that they've developed or some form of service that they're offering. Their expertise does not rely typically with respect to managing the infrastructure that supports those applications, but that's very much our core competency. So we see ourselves very much aligned in the spirit of partnership, and we have all sorts of untold examples of having scaled, you know, some of the largest names on the Internet through adherence and a relentless focus on being able to deliver an exceptional customer experience to them. Ultimately, though, it manifests itself in terms of peace of mind that we're able to deliver to our customers. The peace of mind manifests itself in turn in terms of knowing that we have 24/7 support. We have all forms of accreditation, so the technical expertise and domain knowledge available to them as an extension to whatever form of IT resources they may have themselves is dramatic. Similarly, rather than sort of keeping their infrastructure behind a closet, perhaps in their office, they're able to sort of house that infrastructure within state-of-the-art data centers that can scale as quickly as they can scale. And they also rest peacefully knowing that, you know, if they have a burst of activity or their business experiences significant growth, Pier 1 has a proven ability to be able to scale infrastructure. And so the odds are very low that they'll ever outgrow our ability to be able to service their requirements. So it's a true partnership, and ultimately it brings peace of mind to them and enables them to be able to focus on their core competency as opposed to the infrastructure, which is ours.
So, Fabio, can you define your net promoter score and why that's so important to you?
Sure, I'd be happy to. This is one of our top five-year targets. And the net promoter score is an industry accepted measure that really is driving at the question of how engaged and passionate your customer base is. And it really comes down to sort of asking a very straightforward and very simple question, and that is, how likely are you to refer, in this case, Pier 1 Hosting, to your friends? And so it makes it personal. And in the response, and this is conducted by third parties, who will poll our customer base from time to time we get and measure and are transparent with the results that we generate in terms of how our customers perceive and view the value and the service that they're receiving from us by getting a sense of how engaged and proactive they are and how ultimately likely they are to refer Peer One to one of their friends. And so the framework for the Net Promoter Score itself is really a scale of 0 to 10. At 10, you're really sort of responding that you're very likely to refer Peer One or company ABC to your friend, and 0 is unlikely. And from there, they tabulate just the distribution that occurs. And if you score 8, 9, or 10, that segment of your customer base are sort of defined as your promoters. And if you score 0 to 6, then that group of customers is referred to as your detractors, and then they don't count. I'm sorry, 0 to 5, and then 6 and 7, they don't count in the analysis. And then to determine the net promoter score itself, they're really just taking the promoters less the detractors to arrive at a numerical value. And so a few things to sort of, I guess, point out. First of all, the score can be negative. You can have far more detractors than you can have promoters. And secondly, the results that we receive from our customers from these surveys, we publish transparently. And so if you go back and look into the records, as myself and my partner were recruited 5 years ago and we first adopted the Net Promoter Score, we've sort of set an ambitious target and goal for ourselves, and that is that one of our top goals that we're pursuing as a company is to be recognized as one of the top service companies in the world. And to do that, the measure, the metric we've adopted is the Net Promoter Score, and the standard we've set for ourselves is within 5 years from now to emerge in the top 10 percentile of all companies, and not just in our industry, across all industries worldwide. And so we have plans in place to make measured progress against that objective and that goal. And I guess, you know, the other point to make is most service companies, on balance, service companies around the world, their Net Promoter Score measures in about 7. If you think of like the Four Seasons Hotel or Apple or Harley Davidson, those companies are sort of seeing scores on the order of sort of the mid 70s. And Peer One itself, when we started 5 years ago, and with this as a measure, you know, we had scored 2, and we've made significant progress since then. And our recent scores, which we've published, show us in the low to mid 40s, which put us right up at the top within our industry. And now we're looking to continue to make further refinements in order to arrive in the top 10 percentile of all companies across all industries worldwide.
Now, earlier you talked about this new data center. Now, why should we care about this center?
Well, for a number of reasons. First of all, this new data center is located in the greater Toronto area, and it's the first new data center to come to market in that particular region in some time. There is a significant shortage of world-class, state-of-the-art data center infrastructure in the greater Toronto market. And so it's our largest data center. It's also by far our most efficient data center. And it's also the first data center where we, for the first time, are making available to our customers all three of our core service offerings from under the same roof. And so for us, that means we're offering both co-location, managed hosting, and dedicated hosting from under the same roof of this data center in Toronto. We also have, it's in close proximity to downtown Toronto. It's state-of-the-art in terms of power densities as well as efficiencies, and enables us to be able to consider larger deployments given the amount of space that we have available. And reception to the data center in the few short months that it's been open has been very, very strong. And in fact, we announced just last week that Capgemini Canada has secured interest in that data center. They are taking effectively approximately 25% of the space in that data center for their use as they look to sort of provide services in turn to their customers. So it's a very exciting a data center for us, an exciting time for us to be able to bring a data center of that nature to market. The response has been very favorable, And it's also, in terms of like a tier classification, in terms of the redundancy and the security, it's our flagship data center. It's our state-of-the-art data center. And so for those reasons, I think would be very relevant for those companies, particularly in the greater Toronto region, or those companies who would like to sort of have hosting services in Canada to be made aware of and to consider.
So what are your plans in terms of additional performance-optimized data centers or pods?
Our pods, well, we will be building out. We are well ahead of plan in terms of interest that we've received in the Toronto data center. So with the Capgemini announcement, we have started construction of Pod B, and pods for us really stand for performance-optimized data centers, and it's really just looking at the data center and in effect, building it out in stages. And so the design of the center is very modular in nature, and so a few months ago, we launched with Pod A. With the announcement of Capgemini, we've announced Pod B, and we expect that this year as well, we'll commence construction of Pod C, and there will be a total of four pods available within the Toronto data center. We're also looking very actively at three other sites and locations, and we are getting closer to identifying a more permanent home for our Pier 1 UK operations. As I mentioned earlier, we've been in the UK market now for about a year and a half, and very pleased with the strategic decision to extend our core services into that geography. We had committed to some temporary space in order to be able to establish a base and a presence in that marketplace. And so you can expect that there will be an announcement or news in the quarters ahead where we will look to sort of secure a larger, more permanent home for our expanding European operations. And we've also communicated to all the analysts and to the public that we are looking in the sort of western United States to locate a data center not dissimilar to the one that we built in the Greater Toronto area. So the Greater Toronto area is sort of our answer to sort of a state-of-the-art sort of East Coast presence. We are looking to replicate that along the West Coast in the western states of the United States. And we're also considering a build here within Vancouver where we're nearing capacity.
Well, Fabio, what I'd like to do now is concentrate more on your career, you know, starting with your this sort of fantastic background with an applied science degree and followed with an MBA and then your work with in Canadian investment banking firms and so on. And now your leadership as president, CEO of Pier 1 and taking that to be a very much respected and leading organization worldwide. So mining all of that experience and that success, and the next series of questions are kind of drill in further about, you know, the things that you could provide, some insights that you can share that made you the success you are today and the growth that you are experiencing from a career standpoint and you know, what will be useful, what, you know, what values and lessons you can share. So first of all, what do you consider to be your top three contributions?
My top three contributions, well, I'd have to say, first and foremost, in terms of my experience at Pier 1 Hosting, is really about leading Pier 1 through a turnaround and positioning the company as a leader in its industry. I think it's been a remarkable journey the last 5 years, and that we've made, you know, significant progress as a company. And I guess I would say I'm very proud of that accomplishment and proud of what the team has been able to accomplish in a relatively short period of time. So I certainly would highlight that as one. I also would say that for me, in my role as president and CEO, what I have found most fulfilling in the last 5 years is, I guess, the opportunity to create an environment where, you know, very bright and passionate people can thrive. And for me, I guess, sort of the key lesson or the key, I guess, takeaway that I would leave you with, Stephen, is that it really is all about the team and building an environment where the team can thrive. And, you know, in my experience, there's a lot of talk about, you know, how best to sort of, you know, leverage the HR commitment of your people and how you can use that as a means of creating, you know, a culture that really ultimately creates, you know, the ultimate barrier to entry. And I take great pride, and I've been very fulfilled with the progress that we've made in terms of leading a value-based organization and the culture that we've created. which has ultimately resulted in an environment where we've just seen a remarkable progress and contribution from very, very talented and bright and passionate people, and the difference that that makes and the ability to sort of accelerate, you know, our views in terms of growth and opportunities, knowing that we have that strength and of team behind us. So I'm very, very proud and very fulfilled by having created an environment where very talented and passionate and bright people can thrive.
You know, you led this organization through change, and you did it very, very successfully, building it to a global organization. So what are some of the best practices in leading change of that significance? Like, what do you have to do?
Well, it is, well, Stephen, changes over the course of time. I think as I reflect back 5 years ago, I would say that my role as the leader here was very internally sort of focused. And we had a number of challenges that we had inherited and that we needed to work through. And so it was really about, I guess, back to some of the earlier lessons from, you know, prior experiences, ensuring that we had the right people, and maybe this is too much of a colloquialism, but in the right seat doing the right thing. And it's very simple to say, it's harder to execute, and we're all human after all. And so, you know, we're confronted with a number of difficult issues and challenges, but ultimately you need a team that can scale with your business. And so it was a lot of internal focus and energy in terms of working through challenges that that we had. And over the course of time, you know, my role has emerged as the team taking on more and more leadership and responsibility and delivering greater and greater results. You know, my role is sort of shifted now to where, you know, I'm focused on more strategic issues as opposed to internal tactical issues, where I'm focused in terms of the ever-increasing, you know, base of customers that we have and larger customers, still within the SMB sort of space, but the more complex requirements that they have and the service delivery levels that we need to ensure that we're able to provide to our customers. So I find myself, you know, kind of transitioning from what was, you know, previously more of an internal tactical sort of role in order to be able to provide the leadership and to build the team. And now I'm excited about the future because, you know, the team is firing on all cylinders, and that enables us to be able to consider, you know, a number of increased sort of strategic opportunities. And so my role tends to be more external in nature now. And whether that's from, you know, the investor relations side, or the public relations side, or looking at strategic opportunities, or managing the expectations of our board, it all tends to align itself with more of a strategic role and more of an external role, certainly relative to 5 years ago.
I'm just guessing then that when you were trying to drive change back 5 years ago, that you'd have to go through a new sort of business planning, strategic planning process. You'd have to get all the different kind of stakeholders within the organization together onto this sort of common vision. And that would also mean reallocation of roles, of other people's roles within the company who couldn't manage to keep up with that change. Were there some of those elements there or none at all? Or?
Oh, Stephen, in spades. And I think, you know, as I reflect on the overall sort of life cycle of companies, you really do go through a number of different phases. And that holds true for Pier One as well. And so, you know, when I was recruited, my partner was ultimately recruited to Pier One. You know, we were less than half the size that we are today. Our operations were considerably smaller. We didn't have sort of the international presence, and you know, we didn't have the infrastructure that we do today. And so, as you look at that, and you're constantly sort of reassessing the ability of the members on your team to be able to take it to the next level, there's no question that, you know, a lot of change is required. And so, you know, a number of people, you know, who were involved in the very early days of Pier One, where it was very, very enterprising startup mode, you know, contributed significantly to Pier One. But then, you know, as the organization, you know, does require more structure, and when we started, you know, the whole planning, you know, and operational financial discipline, you know, really needed to sort of be reevaluated and improved upon. And so you do require more systems. It's not to take away from the financial, take away from the enterprising spirit of the organization, but it's just to ensure that the organization can scale. And so you work through these transitions. And so, you know, the issues that you highlighted in terms of, you know, ultimately we ended up, with a new executive team, largely, and a number of new managers and directors. And a number of those came from, you know, other internal roles, where we've mentored and groomed and created an environment where under strong leadership, you know, they've been able to thrive. And so, all sorts of combinations. There's no question companies go through that type of transition, and it's a difficult transition, but it's important, because in order for the company, particularly in our industry, which remains sort of largely fragmented, and there's an opportunity here that, you know, we're chasing, and that is, you know, to be atop the leaderboard, in terms of being, you know, the leading provider to small and medium-sized businesses. We think this opportunity is very significant and material, and we need to ensure at all times that we've got the team that can scale with us, to pursue, that vision.
Now, if you look back over your career, what were some of the most difficult challenges that you were not able to overcome at the time, and what would you do differently now?
Sure. The first one, I guess, that I would highlight is fail faster. And we've adopted that here at Pier 1, but that came about through sort of lessons learned in prior experiences. And by fail faster, I mean, invariably, all sorts of projects and initiatives will commence. And typically, there's so much energy applied at the front end of an initiative or a process and a business case that supports it. And approvals are obtained and the initiative or the process gets underway. What, in my experience at least, often happens is that thereafter, the reporting against that initiative or that process, either starts to wane. And if it's not meeting with success, few people have the conviction just to bring it to an end early. And we embrace change here at Pier 1. And our industry is very, very dynamic. And industries in general continue to be more dynamic. And so, you know, we approach it from a spirit of, you know, key learnings that come from, having the conviction to test something, try something new, but also the resolve to sort of put the parameters in place where, you know, 3 years later, we're not, you know, asking ourselves, you know, what, you know, where is this or what came of that? It's a lot more sort of rigor behind, trying new things and being innovative and bringing new opportunities, you know, to the table. And if they don't work, we celebrate that. We celebrate it in terms of, all right, what are the key learnings that we can apply to the next project? But we don't want to have them linger forever and ever without sort of any sort of end in sight. So, you know, one of the lessons I learned and that we practice more religiously here at Pier 1 is just sort of an attitude and part of our culture in terms of our enterprising spirit is about failing faster. I think the other element, as I reflect on prior experiences, that I would hold out as very important and that I think we've done a good job of at Pier 1, and that is always ensuring you have alignment around your strategy, the priorities that align with that strategy, and the initiatives that sort of align with those priorities. It all needs to sort of be, you know, tightly aligned in order to be able to ensure success. And I think through prior experiences, I just, you know, learned very clearly, like, how central and how important that is. And as we were recruited to Pier 1, or as I was recruited to Pier 1, you know, there really was very, very little planning experience within the company at the time. And so we've worked through that, and our planning cycles have become, you know, just that much more tight and rigorous and insightful and inclusive. And I think as a result of getting alignment around those initiatives that feed into the priorities and into your strategy is really, really important. And so we've spent a lot of time, again, creating an environment where people can thrive, but thrive in alignment with our strategy, our priorities, and our initiative. And I think that's easier said than done, but I think it's absolutely imperative for a high-growth environment, to get that right. Otherwise, you won't experience that growth, in my view.
You know, you've been a very successful executive. What are your top lessons for effective leadership?
Top lessons for effective leadership? Top five, I would say, be authentic. Be yourself. As a leader, people are constantly monitoring, evaluating, your every word and what you don't say, equally importantly, and your actions. And so you are who you are. So, just be authentic. And I've seen a number of instances where people, are trying perhaps to be someone who they're not. And invariably, that always causes challenges. So I think, and as we sort of engage with our team here, it's all about being yourself and being authentic. And then we want to ensure, of course, that there's alignment with our values and that there's a competency and a skill set that matches with our needs. But, I think number one, I'd say be authentic. And another one I would say is trust your instincts. And there's no question I've been involved in all sorts of meetings that go on for, an untold number of hours sometimes, and there's always a remarkable amount of information and a remarkable amount of data. I always try to distill it down in my own mind just really to sort of first principle and not to get lost in all the details. And so over the course of time, I've learned to really sort of rely and trust my instinct. And, I guess my professional career now spans coming up to sort of 20 years. And you know yourself, and you sort of had lots of experiences through a time frame like that. And so I would definitely encourage everyone to trust your instinct and sort of hone that and rely upon that. I mentioned fail faster. I think that's a key sort of undertaking, particularly in the world of business today. I don't think that's just applicable to the hosting industry or to Pier 1 hosting in particular. I think it's a maxim that applies to any business. And so I would encourage others to sort of fail faster or have a system in place where you don't end up with this indeterminable end to sort of projects that get started with lots of fanfare. I think it's very good discipline, and I think it's good for the team as well, because oftentimes there's just not the confidence, perhaps, or the strength to sort of bring something to an end, because there's this stigma that, maybe it's a failure, et cetera. That's not how we view it. We view it going in with the best, we evaluate with the best information we have available at the time. And if things change, as they always do, then we need to be able to course correct at the same time. And so for us, it's just important that we take the key learnings from that and apply it to new initiatives going forward. I also find for myself, I have an expression that I use here internally, and that expression is run your own race. And oftentimes, particularly as we were working through the turnaround, and even to present day, every minute of every day, it appears or sometimes it feels like someone is trying to take you off your game. And I think this is where you need to have conviction and confidence in your strategy and the ability to sort of stay true to the objectives. There's no question you may need to course correct, but I often find that external influences and even internal influences oftentimes will align to take you off your game or to take you off course. And I think as a leader, you need to resist that. There are perspectives you need to factor in. But ultimately, there needs to be conviction and confidence around your strategy, and you need to be able to run your own race. And the sort of related to that, I suppose, is another expression that I use with our team here internally, and that is you really have to get alignment around what type of race it is that you're running. And we'll talk about it with our team that, the investments that we're making are long-term in nature. So I characterize the race that we're running more akin to a marathon than to a sprint. And that requires alignment of your shareholders, of your lenders, of your board, and us as senior management and executives as we deal with our staff. We're making investments for the long term and for sustainable growth. And not all businesses either have that luxury or have that as their strategy. I think it's just important to be clear, whether you're running a sprint or whether you're running a marathon. And if you're running whichever race you're running, make sure you stay on course and resist the temptation or the influences that come typically from external factors looking to take you off your race. So I would say, run your own race. And then I think I mentioned it earlier, to me, as I think about sort of success of building companies, it's all about the team. And it amazes me to this day, just if you have the right environment and have the right people, how dramatic the progress and how exciting it is to be part of a growth company. And so I think that that doesn't come around just by happenstance. I think you have to invest a lot of time in creating the right environment and the right culture. But the rewards, in my opinion at least, are dramatic. And so to me, sort of, I guess the fifth top lesson, I'd characterize it as, you know, it's all about the team.
Well, those are very good points that you're passing on, you know, being authentic, trust your instincts, fail faster, run your own race, and ensure alignment, and it's all about your team. Good points. Now, what specific innovations continue to amaze you?
Specific innovations? Well, I just bought my first Apple product. I bought the iPad a few weeks ago, and I'm just in awe of what I've been exposed to today. And so I don't think it'll be my last Apple product. I think it's just amazing how intuitive it is and how the utility that it provides for me. And I think I've been an extensive user of the BlackBerry for many, many years, and with 13 different locations around North America and now into Europe, I travel extensively, and I've been a big user and advocate of the BlackBerry device itself. And I still carry it around with me, but I have to say, and as I joke about with a few of my colleagues here, first few weeks with the iPad, you know, I'd characterize it as sort of, you know, the BlackBerry for middle-aged men. I mean, it's just so remarkably intuitive and easy to sort of move around, and without having to go through seven or eight operations, you know, you're able to sort of, you know, reconfigure or see things, obviously, on a much, much larger screen. But I find it very, very highly, very high utility to the iPad. I've also, from a very early age, I guess, and I find myself today, you know, through all the airports that I transit through, flight has always sort of amazed me or astonished me. And particularly as you see a 747 making its final approach to touchdown, I just marvel at the science and the engineering behind, you know, flight, and the ability to transport people in that fashion, and just the beauty of that aircraft coming down to touch down. I think it's absolutely amazing. So that goes back many years, but I continue to this day to be fascinated with aerodynamics as well as you know, aircraft design and engineering.
Now, you know, you're sort of the hub or the keystone of an ecosystem of high-end professionals, you know, good thinkers and so on, and you have this opportunity to travel, which you just mentioned. You see a lot of technology. So perhaps you can now look into your crystal ball and provide your predictions for future trends.
Well, for future trends, I think a few come to mind, Stephen. First of all, I think the drivers behind our industry are very much alive and well. And so as I think about technology, the way in which businesses make use of technology, I guess I would say that, you know, I find, you know, the internet to be remarkably disruptive in a good way. I think, you know, one of the founding principles of Pier 1 was just leveling the playing field. And for the first time, you know, small and medium-sized businesses, you know, are able to compete with their larger brethren by virtue of the disruptive nature of the internet. And I just find that amazing. And as I think about, I guess, the future, to address your question, I believe that the dependency on the internet for an increasing amount of business application and processing by businesses of all sizes and descriptions, from, you know, the startups to the Capgeminis, you know, would represent a pretty wide range across our customer universe. I think the dependency on the internet and the disruptive nature of the internet is only going to continue and to accelerate. And I just find that really, really exciting. And I think, you know, a byproduct of that, which I think is, you know, good for our industry and a key driver of our industry, is that, you know, what we've seen and what I expect that we'll see is the complexity around these types of deployments is only going to continue to increase as well. And that's where, you know, I take great fulfillment from the fact that, you know, we as a company and as an industry generally, you know, have a big impact on the lives of our customers. And so I expect that just to continue with increased complexity of being able to maintain and scale this infrastructure, you're going to see more and more companies become overwhelmed by the task of trying to keep up and to be competitive and relevant. And so I expect that to continue. And I think with that continuation is the opportunity for companies like Pier 1 to continue to be able to add increased value to our customers. So I think the internet has been remarkably disruptive to date. I think it's still early days. I expect over the course of time, we're starting to see more and more of it, particularly in the last 12 to 18 months, that a lot of virtualized environments are finding their way. And as I mentioned before, it just creates a far more sort of efficient process and use of overall resources, both computing resources and data center resources, that I expect virtualized environments that will also sort of morph and ultimately sort of move into more cloud-based types of services will become more and more prevalent.
Now, Fabio, you're an elite executive and acknowledged as such internationally. So what do you use to keep at the top of your game? You know, what are your top recommended resources?
Well, for me, Stephen, I've drawn a lot upon trusted advisors and mentors that I've had and feel fortunate to have in my life. And that's as a result of cultivating a network over the past, I guess it's 20 years or so now. And so I'm fortunate. I have a board of 10 seasoned, experienced directors here at Pier 1 Hosting. So I will often seek their counsel. And in addition, I have a network of other trusted advisors and mentors that I tap into and invariably, often find issues that relate to human resources in general or issues that aren't, so much particular to Pier 1 Hosting as to business in general. And I've also found great value from an organization I joined at around the same time that I joined Pier 1. And in Canada, it's called the Executive Committee, or TEC, Tech. And in the United States, it's called Vistage. And it's a for-profit organization, which is a forum. I'm part of a chapter here in Vancouver, where I'm part of a group of 15 other CEOs from non-competing industries that get together on a monthly basis. To have sort of the structure of the day is we have sort of a resource speaker in the morning and then an executive session in the afternoon where one of the members will host each month. And through that discussion and debate, invariably challenges or opportunities that my fellow members on tech will experience, I will have either experienced or will have perspectives and vice versa. And so I find that to be a great sort of sounding board. In a very sort of non-threatening sort of environment or in a competitive environment. And so I think my network and my exposure to a group such as Tech has been very helpful to me and invaluable as I've worked to sort of lead Pier 1 over the last 5 years.
That's interesting, this board that you talk about or this sort of council. What are the fees and is it sort of more open to the general public or is it very select?
No, I wouldn't say that it is open to the public, Stephen, and they have a few different tiers. So the organization that I'm part of is for sort of a senior leader within a company. So there would be presidents and CEOs that would be part of the group. They also have another tier, and I don't recall the name of it, which is appealing to sort of senior leaders, outside of presidents and CEOs. So maybe VP levels or CFO levels, and I've just forgotten the name of that the group under sort of tech, but it's TEC here in Canada, and the fees vary according to, I guess, what group you're part of, and overall the tech fees that I pay amount to, it's about, round numbers, I think it's about $800, $900 a month.
I see. So it sounds like a great opportunity for collaboration, and I noticed throughout this entire conversation, you really center on this, just the whole value of relationships and networks and how that really is a key, factor in success.
Well, you mentioned earlier, Stephen, in one of your questions, what from my education do I draw upon in my current role? And I think if I look back on my years in business to date, one thing that's absolutely clear to me is that business is all about relationships. And so I think everyone needs to sort of invest in those relationships. And I think the more you invest in them, the more you get back from them. And so I feel very fortunate, as I mentioned, with the trusted advisors and mentors that I have in my life. And I invest in those relationships, and I feel like I've received, you know, significant value. But to me, as much, I mean, we're a service company within sort of a technology industry, but you just can't replace that sort of face-to-face time, you know, with a trusted advisor, with an email or even a phone call or video conference. So I make it a point to invest in those relationships, and I think those relationships in turn have been of significant value and benefit to me in my career to date.
Well, Fabio, we're getting down to the remaining last few questions, and one in particular here. You must have some interesting stories to share, maybe something surprising or unexpected.
Sure. A couple come to mind, Stephen. First off, as I mentioned, I was recruited to lead a team to turn around Pier 1 years ago. And, of course, when you come into that environment, you're not always clear, you know, what's there or what to expect. And it was a very interesting first year as we worked hard to turn Pier 1 around. And as I mentioned, they just made two acquisitions. So we basically inherited three companies that we had to work to sort of integrate and bring together and work through all the HR and cultural issues. And it was a very dynamic, it was a very interesting and a very intense year. And towards the end of the year, with all the experiences that we went through, I remember having dinner one evening with Lance Tracy, our chairman and our largest shareholder, as we were just sort of updating him on the progress we had made and just sort of laughing over some of the experiences that we'd been through as a team and as a company. And then it just came to mind, and I got Lance's commitment that my partner Gary Sherlock and I have secured the movie rights to the Pier 1 hosting story. So stay tuned. There will be a movie. It's been a fascinating fascinating history to date, and look forward now as we're in sort of full growth mode domestically and internationally, you know, to add to the story in the years ahead. But it's been a very, very exciting, fun, and dynamic time here at Pier 1 Hosting, and one day I hope to see the movie. I'm not sure who's going to play me or who's going to play Lance Tracy yet, but I think it's going to be an exciting movie.
Hey, that's something to look forward to. Hey, maybe in 3D as well, right?
Yeah, maybe in 3D to boot.
You know, we have this really unique opportunity in that you are such an accomplished executive, and we have so many out there who are mid-career or you know, are looking for career tips from the experiences of somebody with your kind of background. So what kind of lessons and tips would you pass on to the IT professional out there who wants to be a CEO or wants to be a CIO or wants to be a project leader or manager and so on?
Sure. Well, a few come to mind, Stephen. And I suppose the first one is going to pick up a little bit on some previous comments. But I mentioned earlier, you know, be authentic. And by extension, that means, you know, stay true to yourself. And I've witnessed over 20 years, you know, the career paths of many, many individuals. And sometimes I'll come across individuals, people who will wrestle with staying true to themselves. And I've never seen that sort of end positively. What typically happens is you just can't have that level of passion or engagement if you're not being authentic and staying true to yourself. And so first and foremost, I would highlight that as an area for anyone, you know, considering wanting to take on more responsibility and leadership. As you do, you know, the person that you are comes out to the fore more and more. And so, and you can't kid yourself. So you need to be authentic and you need to stay true to yourself. I also, as I talk, you know, with the team here, you know, the focus from my perspective, and particularly if you're in a service company, you always need to enhance your customer's experience. You need to make the customer the star. And, you know, we're here as Pier 1 Hosting in service of our customers. But, you know, what's clear to us, particularly as we looked at identifying an industry standard measure, we talked a little bit about this in a Net Promoter Score to be able to measure and monitor our success and our progress. But that's quite a statement when you look at sort of the IT services worldwide and their Net Promoter Score is 7. I mean, that means that they barely have more promoters than they have detractors. And that's within the service industry. It's not manufacturing. It's not distribution. It's the service industry worldwide. And I just look at that and I think, you know, what an opportunity. And hence, there's a reason why, you know, we are pursuing a relentless focus on delivering an exceptional customer experience. We are a service company after all. And I don't believe that a 7 as a net promoter score is at all acceptable. And so we're striving for much higher. And as a result, in answer to your question, Stephen, I would hold out, you know, we're all here ultimately in service of our customers. And that may mean your customer is internal. It may not mean it's an external customer. It may be a department or a division. But from my perspective, I think the mantra always has to be ensure that you're always enhancing your customer's experience. Make them the star and deliver to them an exceptional experience. The third one I would highlight, and maybe this might be a little controversial perhaps, is, you know, one of our values here at Pier One is we've summarized the strive for excellence. And one of the behaviors that model that value is to seek criticism. And here, this is about, you know, ensuring that you get feedback and that you seek constructive criticism in order to be able to sort of fine-tune as need be to become a more effective leader. And so, you know, proactively here, whether it's through performance management or engagement across our executive team, once again, one of our values is striving for excellence. And I think a key tenet of that, a key behavior that manifests itself from that value is about seeking criticism. And I think all too often, many of us have perceptions of how we're perceived by others, and whether that's other departments or customers or other stakeholders. And I think it's always very revealing when you receive sort of feedback, because we all have blind spots. And, you know, the one thing that we can't control is you don't know what you don't know. And so feedback and perspectives and a proactive approach to seeking criticism, in my mind, is an absolute imperative as people consider, you know, taking on and assuming, you know, more and more leadership. I think related to that, in terms of striving for excellence as a value we have here, I would also highlight, you know, continue to exceed expectations. I think all too often the bar is not held high enough. And as I think about those who have sort of thrived within our organization or in previous organizations, there's always been a passion about not just, you know, hitting the bar, but exceeding the bar. And that might mean different things, or it certainly will mean different things to different people. But I think the overarching comment there is just strive to exceed expectations. And through that, you know, I'd also highlight, you know, one of our other values that is aligned with this is just enabling others to succeed. And that forces everyone to sort of work with other departments. And again, we're focused on delivering a, you know, an exceptional customer experience that that everyone can contribute to or has an influence over. So I would highlight those as sort of the key ones. And, you know, I'm going to throw one more in there, Stephen, if I may. And that is, you know, have fun while you're doing it. We spend so much time within the workplace. I think it's important for everyone to find an environment that's well suited to them, and that as they seek to take on more leadership responsibilities to ensure, you know, they're being true to themselves and authentic, exceed expectations. But I would say actually most importantly, you know, you need to have a focus on an ability to deliver results. I think ultimately that's how leadership is defined. But you can go about delivering results in different ways. And so here at Pier One Hosting, you know, another one of our values, we call it sort of sense of fun and play. And we're dead serious about results, but we go about getting results in a very, very fun and spirited environment. And again, I think it's incumbent upon everyone to ensure, you know, the environment that they seek is well suited to, you know, their personalities and is a good cultural fit, because expectations across all organizations only are going to continue to increase. So for us, we consider that very important, and I would hold that out to your readers, Stephen, as another, I guess, accumulated wisdom, I think is how you referred the question, for them to consider.
Well, we're down to our last questions, and these are very broad in scope. You know, there's this concept of ITS profession, and there's this sort of attempt to build it out to be recognized like medicine, law, engineering, and so on. And, you know, what are the common elements of a profession? Well, there's demonstrated professional development, adherence to a code of ethics, respected credentials. What are your views on this concept of ITS of a recognized profession?
Well, I think, Stephen, we, you know, our industry is a professional industry, And I view, you know, our role in that industry and our company in particular as a professional organization. And so, you know, we abide by a number of standards, whether that's, you know, from an infrastructure perspective, so standards like SAS 70 or PCI compliance, or all the professional accreditation that particularly our engineers, our technical support people, our technical account managers have in terms of their professional accreditation, and the investment that we make in the continued education and professional development of our staff, of our peers. And so I believe we already operate under a number of standards, and I think sort of the IT profession in general is very professional. And I certainly hold ourselves out as a professional organization, and I hold out our peers, all of our 400 employees, as professionals seeking to you know, deliver and focus on addressing the needs of our customers.
If well, you know, I'm just thinking here. We've talked about a lot of different areas. Now, what if I sort of reversed it and said, you know, what did we miss? In other words, what kind of questions would you ask, and then what would be your answer answers if you were doing this interview?
Well, one question I might have asked, Stephen, perhaps, would be, you know, as I think of leadership, what would I find most fulfilling about, you know, my role as CEO? And it's been a remarkable journey. It's been very, very fulfilling. I would say it's been very intense. But I think, you know, for me, what I've enjoyed the most and what I find the most fulfilling, and I think that's important because it's just, it occupies so much of our time and the passion and the energy that you bring to anything that you do. And for me, I guess it comes down to, you know, two comments. One is really the tremendous impact that we have on the lives of our customers. And I just find that very fulfilling. We make a big difference in the lives of our customers. And increasingly, as they become more and more overwhelmed with the challenges that they're faced with, as a service organization, I see an opportunity to be, you know, a significant enabler and an opportunity to provide, you know, even greater value and peace of mind to our customers. And so I personally derive a lot of fulfillment from the services that we do and what our purpose and meaning for existence is. And so I found that very fulfilling. And then secondarily, and I've already mentioned this, but I think for me, personally, at least in my role, I find and take, you know, great gratification and fulfillment from the fact that, you know, we've created an environment where, you know, just very talented and very bright and very passionate people can thrive. And I think for the most part, that's really exceeded my expectations. It's the first time that I hold the role of CEO. And for me, you know, the HR component, we are a service company after all, so the people who work for you, our peers, you know, we need to create an environment, you know, where they are passionate and will do more than, you know, they might do at one of your competitors. And I just feel really good about the progress so many of our peers have made and how much interest there is from, you know, external parties now to be part of, you know, the Peer One environment and the Peer One culture. And so in my role, I would sort of hold that out as just you know, a very, very fulfilling part of the progress that we've made together as a team, I guess, in the 5 years that I've been here at Peer One Hosting.
Well, I really enjoyed spending this time with you, Fabio. You're just simply a remarkable executive with a remarkable background. And, you know, we will continue to follow your significant contributions globally. And we thank you for sharing your time, wisdom, and accumulated deep insights with our audience.
Well, thank you, Stephen. It's been my absolute pleasure. Thank you.
I'm Stephen Ibaraki, and this concludes our exclusive interview with Fabio Banducci, President and CEO, Peer One Hosting.